Before we begin, Simran and I would like to acknowledge that we're recording this podcast on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nations. We'd also like to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the land of the Combomary people of the Yugambeh language group, and we'd like to acknowledge and pay respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to First Nations listeners.
Always, always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
My name is Ryan.
And I'm Simran.
And this is the podcast for Burnt Out Divas.
Trying to stay
Broadly Relevant.
We're so back, baby.
This is crazy. We're recording in person at home.
At home. Usually we do it in a studio, but this time around we do it in the library.
Like in person.
IRL. In my home.
What's a major achievement you've had in your life recently?
I went to the doctor's office and said, hey girl, I think I have ADHD.
That's really exciting.
What should I do? Yeah. So that was pretty good. You?
I beat you on Instagram for followers recently.
You win!
I have about 100 more followers now than you. And no, but like, because you were like the benchmark for success. And I'm like, I've redefined success now. Broadly culture.
Lots happening in culture this week.
So much happening in culture.
The Summer I Turned Pretty. Maybe the greatest show of our generation. That's how I pitched it to my bosses that I wanted to cover.
I still haven't watched it.
And it's like diabolical. It's like you don't respect my culture, you know? Okay, so for those of you who have been living underneath a rock, The Summer I Turned Pretty is by the author Jenny Han. She also wrote the books To All the Boys I've Loved Before. I think she did like My Life with the Walter Boys, I think, as well. And she is a genius. She's produced the show, created the show as well. And it's 3 seasons long. This is the last season. So it had like a lot of hype, and it basically follows like these two brothers and this girl who are like in a love triangle. And the whole, the plot is basically the girl who like is trying to get the house, that like a summer house that they all hang out with in. It's definitely like a love thing, but I'm like Belly, who the main character is, just wants to like get her hands on those keys to the summer house.
Totally.
And like, get your bad girl. Anyways, I just think it's like the phenomenon to this is kind of crazy. Like it really
is. It's one season. Like what am I looking at here? Like,
cause it's three seasons.
Okay,
this is the third season. The last episode premiered on Wednesday this past week.
So this was like the finale of it.
It was a lot of it's like a lot of yearning, a lot of like love. You know, I feel like it's the perfect amalgamation of, you know, like that adolescent kind of teen movie drama that like we've been missing a lot of. I feel like we've been like rom com starved a little bit, like good rom com starved. And I think this was like a good.
You know, Camp Rock 3 is coming.
I did know that. So we are being fed, baby.
Yeah.
So I feel like these are all like coming slowly, but this was a really big moment for that. And I think maybe that's actually, now thinking about it, we don't get like rom-com movies anymore, but I think we get really good series in a generation.
Yeah. No, we had the, what was it? The Removalists? No, the Renaissance?
The Materialists?
The Korean-American playwright?
Yes.
Celine Song.
The Materialists? Yeah. No, that did not save rom-coms at all.
Oh.
You heard it here first.
I never watched it.
Neither did I.
You spoke about it.
Yeah, we critiqued it. Did we put up an episode? No.
I have no clue.
Who knows? But
we're back now.
Anyways, The Summer I Turned Pretty is like just incredible, and it's made like everybody go crazy, Gen Z, millennials. And now we're finding out that there's a movie also that's coming. Yeah, very excited. It was
to like finish off the plot.
Well, the plot is kind of finished. Like you like understand who she meets, but it missed a lot of like key scenes from the book, including like literally like the wedding. So that was a key thing that we wanted to see, like the two end characters, Belly and Conrad get married. There are a few like lines from the book that like readers felt like they needed. I personally want the parents of the main characters, so it's Adam, Laurel, and John. Those are the parents that are left. Spoiler alert, someone dies. And I want them to go on a singles cruise that was mentioned.
Yeah.
In the last episode. Love that.
And that's what you want the movie to be about?
That's what I want the movie to be. be about just them on a singles cruise.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah, kind of fun. Jenny Han today, at the time of recording, she was like, you know, we're like, okay, when is this movie coming out then?
Do you know anyone who's been on a singles cruise?
No.
It's a bit diabolical.
What's it like?
Well, I have a friend who didn't necessarily go on a singles cruise, but was single and went on a cruise with other singles.
Yeah.
But then it's like the pining that they experienced when they came back, because they're like, I fell in love with this British boy and I almost moved to England. Well, and I'm like, so no more cruises for you.
Yeah, but that's like every exchange ever, don't you think?
Who did you fall in love with in Portugal?
I fell in love with a British boy and now I'm a comedy star. Yeah.
There was a British boy that I fell in love with.
Yeah.
Once.
Yes. And yeah.
Yeah.
And you were going to move.
Hey, Jordan.
Yeah. Oh, name drop.
He does not listen to this.
Oh, okay. So fake love. Yeah. I mean, no, it was very...
Well, it was 7 years ago, and he has a new boyfriend now, so...
Well, that's never, you know...
No, they're open, so...
Oh, okay. Jordan, if you're seeing this... Anyways, Jenny Han, Jenny. She was in an interview today with the Today Show, and...
Which didn't get canceled.
We'll get into that. She was like asked, like, you know, when is this coming out? And she was like, 2026, 2027. And she's like, oh, it definitely won't be next year. Like, they've just like handed in like the first draft sort of thing. The theory is that maybe it's actually coming this year.
No.
Yeah. And that's like why she just said yes. It's because she fucking loves an Easter egg.
That's
like,
interesting.
Throughout this season, I've looked forward to going to work on a Thursday because I get to write an Easter egg like article from the episode the night prior. And it's been wonderful. So I actually think, here's my thing. Okay, someone on TikTok was like, oh, okay, the number 14 keeps coming up in these episodes, but we never got an explanation why. And they think that like the 14 weeks from the last episode is like Christmas period.
Okay.
And she thinks that we're going to get the movie on Christmas or a Christmas special.
That's really optimistic.
Yeah.
What's the relationship between this sort of practice and sort of like the way Taylor Swift approaches like music marketing? And what does that say about the way that we gain attention in this economy? You know what I mean?
No, funny you bring that up, because Jenny Han is a Swiftie through and through.
Yeah, there's the link.
She went to the school of Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And there's so many Taylor Swift songs.
Is she even marketing this new album?
Oh, The Last Showgirl?
I haven't heard a lick of it. I was watching some commentary from the Swiftologist about like the marketing rollout. Like there's nothing.
Where is it? Yeah.
And it was like, actually in hindsight, launching on a podcast. I mean, who does that?
On a sports podcast?
Yeah. Owned by your boyfriend. It's like, are you being real?
I know. I think she's just having fun. But like, I want more than that.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. I'm at this stage where I'm like, artists don't get to have fun. Well, in the sense that, like, obviously they can, but I think art, when you share art, you're sharing it, you're giving it to someone, and you have to approach it with a sense of generosity and, like, giving, and just to have a little bit of fun, it's like, well, that's fine, you can post on Tumblr, but you don't need to, I don't know, do you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying. I just think that sometimes the concept of artistry takes away from like personhood, and I think that we need to stop like
does it
taking away from that. Like she's just she's just a girl at the end.
I mean,
she's not just a girl; she's a billionaire.
Yeah, so I think it's just different because it's Taylor Swift. Yeah, you know, that's
and we're open to critiquing.
She's done the biggest fucking thing at the MCG, like you know.
Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah, you do expect more. I get that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe this is just more of a pointed, like, you pointed to you.
I don't know. I just, ever since I saw her at the Eras Tour, I liked her less and less and less. Oh. No, obviously the Eras Tour was great, but then she came out with, like, Tortured Poets. And I'm like, it just wasn't a good album.
I know, I didn't like it either.
What anyone says.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that she'll probably like pick up the marketing at some point, but maybe she's just like chilling out for a second.
I hope it's good though, because I'd be down for another Taylor banger. You know what I mean?
I think it will be. There's like this girl on TikTok who does like parodies of like what she expects.
Yeah,
and she's like, "This is what I think Hanson will sound like."
We were alive during 1989. You know, and that's that's an incredible privilege.
Not the year, the album.
The album release.
Yeah. We're children. Thank you.
Yeah, anywho.
Anyway.
In other news, do you know the literary journal Mianjin?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it founded in like the 1960s.
I thought you just said I founded it.
I founded it. So it's one of Australia's like longest running literary journals. Really great home for really excellent independent writing. Also not afraid to like publish things which were like political, which is like, you really love to see it in this environment because as we're going to see in our news segment, there is a cost to having like saying what you care about and what your values are.
Absolutely.
And so Mianjin, which has been this beautiful place for like writing. Also, it turns out that the reviews editor at Mianjin reviewed my show at Fringe last year. I made that connection and I was like, huh, damn. But yeah, and then so in breaking news, like early September, so Mianjin is published by Melbourne University Publishing, which is the publishing arm of Uni Melbourne. And early this month, they came out with a statement that saying Mianjin is getting closed down at the end of the year. So they have two more editions to come out and then they're getting shut down.
Yeah.
And the statement which they wrote was very interesting because it went to great lengths to reiterate that it's being closed down for strictly financial reasons. The phrasing was purely financial reasons, which is an insane way of saying that, because if that was true, you wouldn't need to be so, do you know what I mean?
Intense about it.
Yeah. And so there's been like a massive uproar over the past like couple months, weeks. There's protesting in Parkville outside the MUP offices, and lots of discourse around it. And I read a really interesting article from Ben Eltham, writing for The Conversation. And I love The Conversation.
So
also
good.
Published by Uni Melbourne. Did you know?
Interesting.
Going through sort of like why they're closing it. And it's been really fraught because the current editor is under an NDA, so like can't speak out about anything. But basically, there's been like people, like multiple apparently offers of people to buy the journal and run it themselves. There's been people who've stepped in offering money to UniMelb to fund the journal. And UniMelb said no to all of this money. And so it's like, okay, so it's not purely financial reasons.
Yeah.
We're seeing this pattern of behavior that's indicating that it's actually not about the money here. It's about probably, and what the hypothesis is, what's getting published, which is stuff that is critical of Israel's genocide in Palestine.
Shocker,
because Uni Melbourne, as we all know, has a history of surveillance of staff and students and policing what gets said on their campuses.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to view it through that lens, which I think is the lens with which to view it. But yeah, it's like, it's a dark day for literature in this country. It's a dark day for freedom of speech. It's a dark day.
Indeed. Yeah. I feel like that's like something, especially now, and we'll get into it in news. We keep leading up to it, but
We're edging you.
that we see it in America, but I think like people need to know that it's like happening very much here as well. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like this feels like the censoring of like media feels like very far away, but it's actually, you know, happening right on the soil here.
Well, I mean, Antoinette Latouf.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I appreciate, you know, like Et Media, which is run by Antoinette Latouf and Jan Fran, publicizing like more instances of this. Like they did like a segment on
the Mianjin closure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is great because like driving that forward and like publicizing it more, I feel like it's a very like inside baseball thing that like, as working as a journalist myself, like I've definitely heard of, I know like, you know, in different like workplaces, like how much you have to like fight to like write certain things.
Yes, totally.
And like be censored. And it's definitely a thing that like everybody knows about in the industry, but it's nice seeing, it's in one way, it's nice seeing that other people know about it too. But the way that they know about it is because like of the consequences that are quite like dire to the media industry and the freedom of information, you know?
Well, it's just, it's that horrible thing that like a lot of the fund, because the government, like it's this, I don't want to call it a conspiracy, but it's not, so I'm not going to. But like the way that we don't fund arts in this country and don't fund our media properly. And so then our media and our arts need to be reliant upon philanthropy. And then it's like, okay, so we're relying upon philanthropy, and philanthropy has certain requirements on what you can and can't say in order to continue receiving that philanthropy. And it's like, because we don't have a government with a single spine, as we'll talk about in the news section, as a result, we get gagged from saying what matters and listening to and observing the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's really depressing. Thank God for this platform.
No, totally.
I don't want to say we are the bastion of the free press.
Shut up. Okay.
Broadly News. I haven't been able to do that in person for like so long.
But it feels so right. Good. It feels right. Do you feel the difference, listeners?
Yeah, it's good.
Don't start with them.
Shall I start with my news? Climate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll start with the climate news. Okay, so like breaking news. It's not breaking, but like, so the government released a report.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the single largest bit of reporting from the Australian government ever about the effects of climate change in Australia. Specifically like modeling what the next decades will look like in this country. And it's not good. Let me unlock my iPad so I can tell you all about it and we can quiver in fear.
Yay, together. And that's what we want from this podcast.
I actually think that makes it better though. Like, because we're going it together.
It's a bonding experience.
And it's
that's
like,
what they say trauma bonding is.
Well, and everyone's like, oh my God, the world's going to die. And I'm like, yeah, but you were already going to die.
You were going to die. No, okay, but that's also like a right-wing talking point. You know, like, it doesn't matter about climate change. We're all going to die anyway.
Oh, no, 100%. And and we got to protect the children and the children's children, et cetera, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But also, like, we got to do it together.
Yeah, period.
We live together and we die together.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyhow, so the document was called The Climate Risk Assessment.
Wow.
And I'm going to read through some of the headlines that pop out to me. Under 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, which I think we're already locked into,
mm-hmm.
sea levels will rise by 0.14 meters, but they would rise by 0.54 meters under a 3 degrees scenario, which we're not doing anything to prevent. And Queensland is home to 18 of the 20 most exposed regions in the country. They warn that 597,000 people are living in areas that will become exposed to sea level rise by 2030, which is 5 years away.
But we all die together. Right?
I'm going to say that again. 500,000 people in this country are in regions that will be facing sea level rise within 5 years.
That's like doesn't even surprise me.
No, it does, because I mean, like, we're from the Gold Coast, and it's like I reckon those 500,000 people are the Gold Coast.
Yeah,
except everyone in fucking Binogan. They're going to be safe from climate change. What else do we have here? They go through. Look, it's very dire. Other things from the report, 40 to 70% of species will be forced to move, adapt to new conditions, or die out under a 3 degree scenario, with half of plant life in any location becoming different species to what was in environments in 1990, which is like crazy, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like ecosystems, are, like it's all the things we know, but that it's different. The T is that now the government is saying it.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris Bowens, who's the environment minister, released a statement saying that they would come out with a target for this and how to approach this and how to deal with it. He said, I think many Australians will find this report confronting. I would say to people, let's be clear-eyed about the challenges. Let's be realistic about the threats, but let's be optimistic about the future.
Mm.
A week later, they come out with the targets that they want for 2035. So the emissions targets and how many emissions they want to reduce. And they come out with a target of reducing emissions by 62 to 70% from 2005 emissions amounts by 2035. Have I explained? Does that make sense?
As in like...
So the amount of emission in 2005 by 2035, which is 30 years after 2005, 62 to 70% less than 2005.
Of that. But the rate of emissions has gone up since.
Yeah.
Yeah, is what you're saying to me. Yeah.
But it's just like, that's so crazy that we just read that report that you published.
Yeah.
That said 500,000 people will be facing sea level rise in 5 years. And then your emissions card target is like a little bit over 50%. And it's just like, sorry, I was eating the microphone there. Yeah. That doesn't like...
Yeah, it's a little over 50% of an old target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, I don't really know. How do you react to that?
How do you react to that? Well, that's where we're crying together, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really disappointing. Is it surprising? No. And I don't know how to... I hate this nonsense. I want to be surprised, you know?
Yeah.
Ever heard of her, Albo? Come on, surprise me. Dazzle me.
Yeah, so Chris Bowen, who was the one who said we've got to be optimistic, said that a 2035 target above 70% was not achievable because the new goal is aligned with the global aim of limiting temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which is the same amount where millions of people will be moving houses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, oh, so we're planning for climate refugees. And it's like, obviously we are, because obviously that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then it like also, you know, like circles back to the way that we interact with like migration in general. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like...
Is it Tuvalu?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to give the quick rundown of that?
That Tuvalu like went underwater and like wanted to...
Well, so Tuvalu, because Tuvalu is like a bunch of like low-lying island atolls. Atolls? Yeah. Atolls. Atolls. Atolls? Atolls.
You're in the word.
Basically, the Australian government is now running a lottery over the next 20 years where, like, within 20 years, basically the whole population of Tuvalu will have moved to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a yearly lottery to get people out of the country, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, sorry, what? What?
It's like, we know all the facts.
We have
all the facts. Yeah. You yourself, the government, published all those facts. And what are we doing about it?
What are we doing?
Nothing. We're not planning. And if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And this is giving that. It's like so basic, you know? Like, we're already seeing it happen in Tuvalu. Like, that will be us. And the way that we're reacting to Tuvalu sets, like, precedent of, like, how other nations then react to, like, climate refugees.
Well,
and,
it's that...
When we become that, what happens, you know?
It's that thing of, like, I had one of, like, the craziest experiences in my life. Not the craziest, but, like, insane. I went to Italy.
I thought you were just going to leave it there. we get it, Ryan, you went to Italy.
But at one point I was like having dinner with some new Italians that I'd met. And then they were like, oh, where are you from? Because my accent is that good that they couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, Australia. And then they were like, oh my God, you guys, the way you deal with the boats is really inspirational. We really need to start doing that.
Yikes.
And I was like, hang on. And you know when you're like... turns out I don't speak this language properly because I don't understand what you've just said. And I had to get them to say it like three times. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And when you say the boats, what? and they really reiterated that they meant
immigration.
The way we handle immigration is what Italy needs to do.
Yikes.
And it's like, oh.
See, exactly. We're setting an example and it sucks.
I don't know. It's just, we have a lot of responsibility to do the work of undoing the harm that exists because of colonialism, and we got to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have less responsibility.
Thanks.
But I've got a lot of responsibility to do that.
Okay. Get right on it then.
Off you go.
I don't know how to segue this.
Anywho. Any other political stuff happening in the world?
Good segue, right? Yes, let's take it to our favorite dumpster truck fire political situation, America. So you may have heard Jimmy Kimmel ousted from his Jimmy Kimmel Live late night show after he made comments about Charlie Kirk's shooting. So Charlie Kirk was a extreme right wing commentator.
Twink.
Oh.
dead twink.
No! I don't know what's gonna happen, but someone's gonna come after us. Anyways,
how do you feel about that?
Getting come after.
Yeah.
Not great, because it happens a lot to me.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? Okay. Anyway. Not as much as Jimmy Kimmel right now, but okay, so Charlie Kirk, right-wing commentator, you would have recognized him from all of the news headlines recently. So, like, you know who we're talking about.
He did a lot of, like, the...
Prove me wrong. That was his table at university campuses where he'd, like, debate with, like, children, like, teenagers, and then be like, look, I got them. And it's like, they're learning. They're literally in school to learn. Like,
and all... I mean, this is not the time for this nuance, but it's like we need to denormalize debating the right, because that just normalizes, like, I just actually think we can draw a line that genocide is bad.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get a pencil out and draw that one.
Period. And I always knew you were so creative. Anyways, so this is what Jimmy Kimmel said, okay?
I'm ready.
So it was on his own late night show that he runs, and it's his show, but it's owned by ABC, which is owned by Disney. So he said in his opening monologue, he was like, "We reached some unprecedented lows over the weekend with the MAGA group desperately attempting to frame the individual murdered Charlie as anything than one of their own while trying to exploit the situation for political gain." And that was like kind of it. And it was literally true. Basically, after the reaction of like Charlie Kirk being shot, every single like right wing commentator was like, you know, like this is what happens, like political violence, this political violence, that, you know, like how dare you go shoot? Even though Charlie Kirk himself was like, you know, if some people have to get shot, then some people have to get shot in like defense of like guns.
Well, his last words were literally like playing up the danger of trans shooters.
Yes.
Of which there have been like five in the past, what, decade?
Yeah.
Where, like, compared to like literally thousands of not trans shooters.
Yes.
Was his last words.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways. Anyway, so that's what he said, right? Didn't land well. Didn't land well with
the ABC stations.
Landed well with us. But basically, this huge TV group called Nextstars, who is like in cahoots with ABC, they explained Kimmel's remarks as offensive and insensitive at a critical moment in our national political dialogue.
Dialogue.
Yeah. The Andrew Alford, who is the president of Nextstar's broadcasting division, said, "Continuing to offer Mr. Kimmel a platform in our communities is not in the public interest at this moment, prompting our challenging decision to preempt his show to allow for a return to respectful and constructive dialogue," which I thought was so interesting. So in its place of like where the show would usually be, they're going to put like a special that like is in remembrance of Charlie Kirk, which I think is like, oh, like even, you know, just like another.
That's Nazi shit.
It, literally Nazi shit. Like, it's so insane. They have come back with a list of demands for Jimmy Kimmel if he wants to come his back. Show back.
Oh, I didn't open that article. Tell me.
Yeah. So the list of demands include an apology to the Kirk family, a meaningful personal donation to the Kirk family, and Turning Point USA, which is like the youth, it's like a political group that was founded by Kirk. That's who's behind like...
Sorry, the network has put out these demands.
Yeah. This is by Sinclair, which is like part of like the ABC conglomerate.
Is it part of? Because some of my understanding of, and keeping in mind, I haven't done the research here, was that part of the drama is because the way TV works in America is that a lot of the local channels will be syndicated and they'll be separate organizations. And so my understanding was that the syndicates basically said they won't broadcast it. So Disney had the...
Yeah, yeah.
Had no choice but to pull it. So I guess my question is Disney putting out these demands, basically, or is it the syndicates putting out these demands?
It's the syndicates, and like Disney's like not saying no to it.
Well, but then the syndicates actually have the power because they're the ones who basically pay Disney to make Kimmel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Correct. And I think that's very interesting. Like the Washington Post also like said that, you know, like essentially all these like late night talk shows or like anyone in the media have to like fluff the right wing in order to get money to like make their shows. And like, that's kind of where we're at. And it's clear, like, it's so interesting because Kimmel is literally like, they're exploiting the situation for political gain. And that's, he's like, what he said is coming true.
That's journalism, baby.
It's coming true because Trump is, you know, reacting to this whole situation. He said, "Jimmy Kimmel is not a talented person. He had very bad ratings and they should have fired him a long time ago." You can call it free speech or not. He was fired for a lack of talent. And then he like, you know, says in a different interview, and he was like, "There's only Jimmy like Fallon and Seth Meyers left, like, you know, NBC, like, go for it," basically wanting to get rid, because he's gotten rid of Stephen Colbert for like having critical comments against Trump. That show is ending. Now Jimmy Kimmel, like, he's literally picking off the media that don't you know, fluff him, basically. Mm. And similarly, like the same week, he like lashed out at an Australian journalist from the ABC.
I remember this. And he said he was going to dob on them to the Prime Minister.
To the Prime Minister when he
Which
was meeting
crazy.
Us. So crazy. It like read like a, like it sounded like a threat because he was like, you know, like you need me to get along with like Australia, basically, is what he said. Mm. And I was like, that's just insane to me. And he was in the UK and then like had like dinner with King Charles after. Like, what the fuck are in those files?
I have a question around, like when I was younger, I was like, I want to be an artist, you know, and you wanted to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And it's this thing of like, now that we are doing these things, it's like, we can't just be these things. We actually have to be activists mm-hmm. in order to do these things. Mm-hmm. There's no full thought there, but it's like.
No, I understand what you're saying. And I guess it comes back to a tale as old as time is that everything is political.
Everything is political.
Unfortunately and fortunately, you know?
Yeah.
Like in this space right now, I think it's a little unfortunate that things have to become
so politicized.
Yeah. When in actuality, like, you know, freedom of speech is just like your opinion.
Mm.
But the right have made it so that it's like inflicting on like humanity, you know, infringing on humanity. And so therefore, like these like politicized conversations are so harmful now from the right.
It's so bad.
It's so.
Hey, fascism is bad.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I just think it's so wild that he like Kimmel like wrote his prophecy, essentially, you know, he just like pointed out the obvious that they're scrambling to like turn this like Charlie Kirk thing, he's like a martyr essentially.
Totally.
And like kind of like just like crank up this like outrage machine and just, you know, push some really like insane like talking points like left wing extremism, that sort of thing. Mm. And like the minute someone calls it out, like the hypocrisy of it all, then like, you know, then suddenly everybody's like, oh my God, they care so deeply about national discourse. But Fox News has been doing this for, you know, decades.
Yeah. Broadly So I don't know if y'all have noticed, but we haven't really put out many episodes the past few weeks. And that's mostly my fault.
I also think it's my fault.
No, it's definitely my fault.
but I think actually
it is your fault.
No, and I'd agree with you. No. I think actually this year we haven't like been
on top of it. Yeah. On top of it. It's been a year of change.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons, like interpersonal careers, I'd say.
Personal careers, personal lives. I think, so we wanted to chat about what we wanted really relevant.
This is not the podcast ending.
No, this is not the, oh my God, that's so sounded that.
It definitely, I was like, and this is how we're saying goodbye. No, because I'm like.
Oh my God, that should be the title of the podcast. Is this goodbye?
Oh my God.
Yes, I'm going to rage bait you.
Brilliant. Because I guess I'm curious. I was in a really gorgeous workshop this morning talking about a lot of things, but something that stuck with me was a director talking about how whenever they start a project, they sit down individually with everyone on the project and they say, what do you want to get out of this? Mm-hmm. And then they shape the project to essentially help everyone get what they want out of it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think we don't know what we want out of this.
Yeah.
Anymore. I think we did for a little bit.
Yeah.
And now it's fun and I love this. And I love this ritualized opportunity to hang out with you.
Yeah.
But I think we need to figure out what we want broadly relevant to be for ourselves.
Yeah.
And then I thought, let's be crazy and open up that conversation to the world. Because I think it's also exciting when we share creative thinking processes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sort of show how we make things.
Yeah.
So
behind the curtain.
Yeah. I guess my question to you, Simran, is what do you want?
Whoa. Okay. And all right.
I guess, you know, to start with, it's really like, before we start talking about like, what is this podcast that we're making together? What is your career and where are you going?
Oh my God.
And what do you want it to be?
Brian,
you
what
know?
The fuck is wrong with you?
What?
That's an insane question.
Is this not the conversation that we're going to have?
Sorry. Yes. Okay. Fine. Anything for content, I guess. But okay. So let's take it back to my childhood, shall we?
Totally, yeah. I was there.
Yeah. I was definitely brought up in a household where
It's a beautiful house.
It's a beautiful house. Seva was a really big tenant in my life. And Seva means service in Punjabi. And it's a really big tenant in Sikhi and Sikhism.
Yeah.
And it was just like something that motivated everything in my household and like for my parents. And it was definitely like what you're doing should be in service of like a greater good. And I think I've like taken that through my life and it's like served people and like I hope and like served myself well, you know, like it's a circle. And I just want to, I just feel like I have so much privilege. I have so much privilege and I would like to use it for good.
Yeah.
And I hope that my career somehow reflects that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like where I want to go with that. Does that mean that I'll always be a journalist? I don't really know. Like maybe that's like not the avenue that can do the most good at the time. Or,
well, you didn't even study journalism. I find your career really interesting because you just one day were like, I'm a journalist. And I was like, oh, okay.
I was like, so I've decided.
That came out of nowhere.
It really did come out of nowhere. Yeah.
And you're doing great at it now, but I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wanted to work for the UN and then I wanted to work in like policy and then I worked in like domestic violence for a while and then I like, you know, started making TikToks and now I'm a journalist.
Yeah.
But I am, yeah, I don't know. I just want to be able to help people and not in like a savior complex way, but in a way that like, what the fuck else is the point of life?
Of course. Well, relationality is everything.
Yeah. And build community. And I think that also helps people.
Yeah.
And I would like to leave the world a better place than I found it.
Yeah.
As a baby.
Seva? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Seva. I love that.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. I will return to you, but I guess I'll talk now. Mm-hmm. I guess my difference to you is that I kind of knew exactly what I wanted to do from a fairly young age. Mm-hmm. There was like, do I want to become a clown or a writer, you know, and a double. But it was like always like this artistic sort of like, I want to do theater and performance. Didn't necessarily know within that sort of like bubble of what it was, but I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I think... I mean, obviously, I feel like at the start, like people are, I don't feel like anyone's drawn to performance out of generosity. I feel like you're drawn to it because you like the attention, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's fine, even though I don't perform now, so I don't get the attention.
You find it, I get it in other ways. Right here. You started a fucking podcast. Like, I'm not that altruistic, you know?
No, of course. And, but then I guess the thing that I've really come to in my artistic practice, if I have one, which obviously I do, but I hate sounding wanky. Mm-hmm. So I watch a lot of theater and I watch a lot of bad theater. And the thing that I always come back to is like, how do you evaluate what good theater is or what should theater do?
Mm-hmm.
And like, what's the point of doing theater, which is this stupid fucking expensive art form that nobody can get to in places that are hard to reach for, you know, really a white middle class insufferable audience most of the time, right? Like, what is the point of doing this insane fucking thing, you know, which is a waste of time and for like the distribution. It's like, if I wanted attention, I really should be making TikToks, which, you know, I do sometimes.
Yeah.
And so then it's, but the thing that I come back to is like, theater is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
A good theater is a gift. It gives something, which I think links to Seva, because, and like, even if it's just like an enjoyable hour, like a fun hour, giving someone space to have fun for an hour, that matters.
Yeah.
And then I think it's that other, the other thing that theater's really good at is the fact that you're all there in a room together with people. And as so often, like in contemporary politics, everything's becoming atomized and we're stuck at home watching the world end on our phones.
Mm-hmm.
Theater, I think, can be, I wouldn't say most people practice it as, but it can be a powerful and radical antidote to that because it's a place to come together. And, you know, everyone's talking about third spaces and it's like, I don't want to say the theater's a third space because for the most part, you can't talk during a show. But I think there's something about that coming together.
Yeah.
As like a, as a ritual that's really important, which is also why I think I'm very curious and interested in faith. I think about that time we went to the Sagrada Familia all the time.
Yeah.
We didn't want to pay the tourist fee of like to walk in. So we went, we woke up at like 7 a.m. and went to like the church service at like 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was free. And so I guess giving.
But it was also very special.
and bringing people together, I think, are the things that motivate me. Giving as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Where do you think Broadly Relevant has kind of fit into?
Into those tenets. I feel like similar to the frustrations of like that you have with the theater scene, I think that the new space and like political discourse and just like chats in general is just very formalized and there is like a barrier to like get into it and to have it in a way that's digestible, not because like people like, oh, you know, like you want to like minimize something, but in a way that like you can make it sustainable, you know?
Yeah.
And latch onto it in a real way.
Crazy idea.
Yeah.
Crazy idea. Because I'm trying to figure out, because we're talking about launching a season 3, mm-hmm. which would just be changing the number in the podcast app. But like what would it mean to explore a new format, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy pitch, we're brainstorming.
Okay.
We talked about a lot about like potentially, especially last year, like bringing in like guest interviews every
week.
Yeah,
yeah.
What if, because I love that idea of like informal stuff. And I think that's why I'm really enjoying Instagram at the moment, because mm-hmm. I'm like talking about theater in a way that's not... That's accessible almost. I think accessibility is the most important thing that we can practice in our world. Especially like, you know, like the education system is failing us. We owe our fellow people the ability to access this information.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we're both quite talented in that ability to like synthesize things into simpler ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually really important meaning making and knowledge making. God, I'm so wanky. So my crazy pitch that I've just come up with, what if we keep doing Broadly Relevant kind of the way we do, mm-hmm. but every episode we bring on a different guest host and they're just a random normal person. So instead of like we bring on like a specialized person relevant to something we might be trying to talk about, mm-hmm. it's just random diva.
But off the street.
Not off the street, like pre-planned. You know, and that we can stay, can start with being our friends, but like we could totally like expand that.
And like to the community.
Oh my God, I burped. But do you know what I mean? Is that interesting?
Yeah. No,
and
like
then there's something about like that we're talking about how to synthesize the news and sort of the way the world's ending, really, mm-hmm. And how to build community and how to do that in an accessible way. There could be something really powerful about like inviting people into that process and like doing that together.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
that's
I like
one
that.
Pitch.
Do you think that that's like, I don't know, like for us sustainably, like every week to do that, you know?
Well, because I was talking to you about the way that Culture Club kind of is more limited in scope, because there was a period of time where we were doing like, 7 or 8 topics?
Yeah.
And I think they do less than 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And I think maybe if we limit the scope... And maybe we do theme by theme episodes, and then we could record maybe we swap from like, instead of recording weekly,
mm-hmm.
crazy pitch,
mm-hmm.
Maybe we record like 5 in a day, in a month or something,
mm-hmm.
bring 5 different people through.
On like different topics?
On different topics.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that something?
I like it. I just would like miss, you know what? Like, okay. So like, let's talk about like my dream. When we started this, I was like, I want this to be Broadly fucking media, you know? Like, I want this.
Like, at.
Yeah, like, at media, like, lamestream, you know? I wanted it to be, like, the thing that we do. Like, this is, like, the full-time gig, you know? And I still definitely, like, have that in me because I still want, like, these different avenues to be possible, you know? Like, I want, like, the more daily kind of weekly, you know, vibes. And then I also, because we have, like, so much fun with that. But then I also want, you know, like, this, you know, like, where we incorporate, like, bigger deep dives with, like, community. I love that idea.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, I'm, like, because we're, like, such limited time and we've, like, we're pursuing, like, 5,000 other things. Like, how do we all, like, how do we fit it in? I guess, like, what do we need to sacrifice?
I guess also I'm going to park this conversation. Another thing that I think maybe has stimmied our growth, and I'm not sure, I haven't really thought deeply about it, but I think there's not really been a through line to what we talk about beyond news and pop culture, which is incredibly vague, actually, or incredibly broad, actually. And maybe there's something in like service and taking people's anxieties about the world mm-hmm. and formulating them into something not necessarily productive, because I think we should resist capitalist notions of like productivity and like you have to like do things, but like a way of making peace with something. So and people through that peace can like actually go on to be activists. I guess maybe I'm pitching like, does this need to become an activist podcast? Is that crazy?
What does that mean? I don't know where that looked
like. Like, do we need to, maybe the through line for these episodes, mm-hmm. and I think this is also where we do our best work and best discourse, is when we look at the way the world is ending.
Yeah.
Because I think our strengths, and obviously I'm biased because I am talking about myself, I think our strengths are in, there's a level-headedness to the way that we talk about the world.
Yeah.
I would say we don't catastrophize.
Yeah.
Who's that American entertainer who was like, look for the helpers?
I don't know.
But his advice to like kids in disaster was like, look for the helpers, because the helpers are helping. And I think there's something about, not necessarily like a false optimism where it's like, look for the helpers, but I think when we talk about things, we have the ability to talk about ways out as well.
Yeah.
Which is useful.
That is useful. I don't know if I'm the one, like, we're the ones to do that, because have we done that?
I don't know if we are, but I think we both have an immense capacity to learn new things.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think maybe it is the call of the political moment that we find ourselves in, that more people need to, pardon the euphemism, pick up arms, you know? and like...
Ryan!
And like learn how to make that change, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, because it's we can't do business as usual anymore, mm-hmm. you know? And maybe this podcast would be a format that would have worked great in 2015. I'm not saying it's not working well.
Mm.
Had the time of my life.
Yeah, guys, you like it, right?
But maybe that's sort of the pivot that could
We move to a different thing, yeah. I think that's, okay, interesting. And I think that we can do that with the initial idea of bringing in a rando.
Randos.
Rando.
I think it's fun.
You know what I mean? And like we kind of like frame it, like we like go through like different conversations, and then like maybe we have like standard questions that we ask like each guest, and like how they like maybe make their community like a better place, or like
that's
they're like putting, you know, work into like a certain like social justice issue that they're like passionate about, sort of thing, because I feel like everybody would have a different story and a different like special interest on like which, you know, social justice issue that they're most like with, you know?
Well, and also I think a lot of people in who might consider themselves progressive
mm-hmm.
get stuck in this like habit of like I'll post the Instagram stories and nothing else will change otherwise,
mm-hmm.
and not deliberately think that, but it's like just you having the right opinions and posting the right opinions to your Instagram story actually isn't something.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I had another thought, like an idea, where I was like, maybe we do, I found that obviously there's a lot of discourse, like you said, like on Instagram, on TikTok, people post a lot of things, a lot of opinions, but they don't know that the policy that goes with it, like the political
context,
like, context that goes with it. And I think like picking something like from like there's like the Sydney Sweeney stuff, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And then like putting that like with like a policy issue like in a certain country or whatever, and then maybe like talking about like with our guests like what they do to combat that or something like that, you know?
Mm.
Does that kind of tickle you? Because I don't want to lose like the
pop culturiness.
The pop culturiness and the newsiness of like talking like about something that's kind of like more
current,
opposed to like these like vaguer, bigger
stories,
because I think that's like was our issue, that it is vague, but that is still sounding vague.
Yeah, I think the limit that I'm coming up against in our current structure, in our current format, is that it's like I say what's happened,
mm-hmm.
and then what, and even, you know, when we were prepping today, you were like, I need to come up with a take, and I'm like, well, you know, what is the take that I have for the climate report apart from everything's fucked and the government needs to do better? Like that,
yeah,
there's not much to that take.
Yeah.
And not much that saying that take to our, you know, leftist pilled audience. I'm assuming you're all leftists. there's not much I think saying that really serves them.
Yeah.
Serves you. Hello.
Yeah.
Except to be aware. Because I think the thing that I've felt watching genocide unfold mm-hmm. over the past 2 years is that I don't think bearing witness is inherently morally good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is important to know what's happening, but I think a lot of people kind of get to witnessing. And then they're like, it's good to just witness it. And then they watch, you know, genocide unfold on their phones. But it's like...
And then what?
And then what? It's almost uncomfortable now because you've let yourself turn this genocide into a passive... not entertainment, side of entertainment, but side of effective response, like effective rather than like something to fuel you to do something. And yes, obviously showing up to the protest, and obviously that's really good and important and part of it, but it's like bearing witness isn't enough.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. I also, sorry, this is like not like the same thing, and it's like not on the same weight.
Yeah.
But like I have like beef with like mental health awareness.
Oh my God. Are you okay?
Yeah. And like I find it like Selena Gomez is like a mental health like charity like for awareness. And I was like, okay, yeah, people are aware, you know, like.
Knowledge may be power, but knowledge doesn't. Knowledge. What am I trying to say?
Find it.
Knowledge isn't power in and of itself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, but by knowing things, it can show you where to practice and find power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, that's good.
It still feels clunky, but you know.
Hey, we're just like.
We're working through things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a good spot.
I feel like I have some ideas that we can sit down and.
And mull out.
Really pick through.
I think maybe we're going to, I'm going to do it. I'm going to remember everyone. I'm going to remember
what are you going to remember?
I'm going to put a poll in our Instagram, and I'm going to put down like a few jotting ideas of like what maybe our listeners value in broadly relevant, and then we can like work around of like what that looks like. Don't worry, this format will still go till we start like season three.
Maybe we do an Instagram story.
Yeah.
And like each story is like a different poll. Because I'd love to know what like why people listen to us.
Yeah.
We should do a census almost.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. We're doing a broadly relevant census.
Great. Yeah. We'll do that this week ish.
Yes, this week ish. It's Friday. We're not gonna do that this week. We're gonna do it on Monday. Yeah.
But
I think that's kind of
there's
where
something
we're at.
Exciting here.
I think we're excited. Yeah. Thanks so much for being patient with us and coming along the journey with us. And we love you all dearly.
Should we check out?
Let's.
What's something that's giving you joy at the moment?
Ooh, meal prepping. I know that's really, it's giving late stage capitalism, but I think it's more like, wow, I really care about myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the time to like, care myself, you know? What about you?
I'm really excited for Melbourne Fringe, which opens in 3 weeks, which I'm doing two shows in, but also it's just really fun seeing all my arts friends work towards something. And, you know, I'm going to get to go to the Festival Hub every day and see all my friends and make new friends. It's just really exciting to see artists doing things.
Period.
Yeah.
If you loved this episode and you love artists doing things, let us know by telling a friend about this podcast. Go follow us on Instagram at Broadly Relevant, and thanks so much for listening.
Love you.
Bye.